Welcome to From the Hat, a podcast, the program where every episode is a different topic and all of the topics for the shows are drawn from the hat. Anything is fair game. So a couple weeks ago, I was talking with my children, and the idea came up. We were made some reference to, I believe it was Hansel and Gretel, the story that was most well known, told by the brothers Grimm. And my children had a vague reference to the story of Hansel and Gretel. And I thought, they knew that there was a house with candy, but they didn't really know the story. And as a father, I felt that I had failed in my duty, in that I understood that, for me, Hansel and Gretel was a paradigm-building story that I learned in my childhood. There are some things there that we reference still to this day. We talk about when you go and link places on the interwebs and you see the little trail of where you've gone, in your files even, and it goes from this folder, this folder, this folder. Those are called breadcrumbs. And it's a reference that goes back to Hansel and Gretel. Then sometimes we don't understand some of the references in daily language and things like that. But I had realized that my children didn't know this story, and I was heartbroken to realize that they didn't know this story. And so I had then gone on to read to them the story of Hansel and Gretel, right from a paper book that we had sitting on a bookshelf that had just never really been read. We've dabbled with it a little bit, but they didn't know that story of Hansel and Gretel. And I've talked many times about the importance of myth and legend and fairy tales and stories, and made the comparison that we do have a modern day variation of these in comics, in movies, in even our daily television shows, that these are the things that we have as a society and as a culture that perpetuate or teach what we value as a culture. And I believe that it is still important to understand the past and understand where we've come from and how we got to where we are. And I do believe that there's a very important thing that we still need to know, and maybe we need to remember some of the things and the values that have been taught in the past. I was listening to another podcast today called Two Average Girls. And it is an incredible podcast. Today they were talking about, on the episode that was released today, they talked about food and the importance of traditions and with food and those things. And I could have talked for hours on just that idea alone of food. But I'm not going to talk about food, but I'm going to talk about that importance of traditions and how traditions as families, we can pass these things down. And we pass ideals and beliefs and ways of thinking. And just like in food, I believe that we do, when we pass down recipes and share recipes, we are then able to share of ourselves and some of the experiences that we have. I can experience the same things that my grandparents experienced, that my great-grandparents experienced through food and through cooking. And on that same light, I believe that through sharing of stories, family stories, traditional stories, fairy tales, myths, legends, those things, we can also understand the past, which I believe helps us to understand our present. And which brings a quote to my mind that was, it's a quote within a quote. But the original quote that I heard was a quote by Fred Rogers, more often known as Mr. Rogers, and he was quoting Eric Erickson, who is a psychologist. And Mr. Rogers was talking about how the ideas and the insight of Erik Erikson into human development, that they'd been an important foundation to the work that they've done on, which he said, in the neighborhood, on Mr. Rogers. And the quote that he said by Erik Erikson was that tradition is to human beings what instincts is to animals. And he went on to expound what he meant, and he said, imagine the chaos if animals lost their instincts. So would it be if human beings were to lose all their traditions. The study of history helps us keep traditions alive. When we study how our ancestors dealt with challenges, we can, hopefully, learn from their successes and failures, and fashion our responses to challenges in even more naturally human ways. So this idea of studying history and studying traditions, according to Mr. Rogers, is vital for us to understand how we can deal with challenges, how they dealt with challenges, how they believed, how they thought, how they practiced. And we can then hopefully fashion, as he said, our responses in more naturally human ways. And so with all of this saying, I'm not going to talk about food, even though I'd love to, but I thought about another story that I really enjoyed as a child that I thought we could just share this story. And if you would like, you can bring your kids into your room, into the room, bring your grandchildren in, bring your friends, bring anyone who you want. And we can share this story that actually came out it was published 185 years ago on April 7th, which, if you are just subscribing, this is tomorrow, Thursday, 2022, April 7th. So this came out, published 185 years ago, written by Hans Christian Andersen, famous author, storyteller from Denmark. Yeah, you might know some of his work as The Little Mermaid, The Ugly Duckling, and many, many other things. But today, we are going to read one of his stories titled The Emperor's New Suit. So sit back, enjoy the story. We'll discuss a little bit afterwards, but enjoy the story of The Emperor's New Suit. Many, many years ago lived an emperor who thought so much of new clothes that he spent all his money in order to obtain them. His only ambition was to be always well-dressed. He did not care for his soldiers, and the theater did not amuse him. The only thing, in fact, he thought anything of was to drive out and show a new suit of clothes. He had a coat for every hour of the day, and as one would say of a king, he is in his cabinet. So one could say of him, the emperor is in his dressing room. The great city where he resided was very gay. Every day many strangers from all parts of the globe arrived. One day, two swindlers came to his city. They made people believe that they were weavers and declared that they could manufacture the finest cloth to be imagined. Their colors and patterns, they said, were not only exceptionally beautiful, but the clothes, made of their material, possessed the wonderful quality of being invisible to any man who was unfit for his office or unpardonably stupid. That must be wonderful cloth, thought the emperor. If I were to be dressed in a suit made of this cloth, I should be able to find out which men in my empire were unfit for their places, and I could distinguish the clever from the stupid. I must have this cloth woven for me without delay. And he gave a large sum of money to the swindlers in advance, that they should set to work without any loss of time. They set up two looms, and pretended to be very hard at work. But they did nothing whatever on the looms. They asked for the finest silk and all the most precious gold cloth. All they got, they did away with, and worked at an empty looms till late at night. I should very much like to know how they're getting on with the cloth, thought the emperor. but he felt rather uneasy when he remembered that he who was not fit for his office could not see it. Personally, he was of the opinion that he had nothing to fear, yet he thought it advisable to send somebody else first to see how matters stood. Everybody in the town knew what a remarkable quality the stuff possessed, and all were anxious to see how bad or stupid their neighbors were. "I shall send my honest old minister to the weavers," thought the emperor. "He can judge best how the stuff looks, for he is intelligent, and nobody understands his office better than he." The good old minister went into the room where the swindler sat before the empty looms. "Heaven preserve us," he thought, and opened his eyes wide. "I cannot see anything at all." But he did not say so. Both swindlers requested him to come near and asked him if he did not admire the exquisite pattern and the beautiful colors, pointing to empty looms. The poor old minister tried his very best, but he could see nothing, for there was nothing to be seen. "Oh dear," he thought, "can I be so stupid? I should never have thought so, and nobody must know it. Is it possible that I am not fit for my office? No, no, I cannot say that I was unable to see the cloth." "Now, have you got nothing to say?" said one of the swindlers, while he pretended to be busily weaving. "Oh, it's very pretty, exceedingly beautiful," replied the old minister, looking through his glasses. "What a beautiful pattern! What brilliant colors! I shall tell the emperor that I like the cloth very much." "We are pleased to hear that," said the two weavers, and described to him the colors and explained the curious pattern. The old minister listened attentively, that he might relate to the emperor what they said. And so he did. Now, the swindlers asked for more money, silk, and gold cloth, which they required for weaving. They kept everything for themselves, and not a thread came near the loom. But they continued, as hitherto, to work at empty looms. Soon afterwards, the emperor sent another honest courtier to the weavers to see how they were getting on, and if the cloth was nearly finished. Like the old minister, he looked and looked, but could see nothing, as there was nothing to be seen. "Is it not a beautiful piece of cloth?" asked the two swindlers, showing and explaining the magnificent pattern, which, however, did not exist. "I am not stupid," said the man. "Is it therefore my good appointment for which I am not fit? It is very strange, but I must not let anyone know of it." And he praised the cloth, which he did not see, and expressed his joy at the beautiful colors and the fine pattern. "It is very excellent," he said to the emperor. Everybody in the whole town talked about the precious cloth. At last, the emperor wished to see it himself, while it was still on the loom. With a number of courtiers, including the two who had already been there, he went to the two clever swindlers, who now worked as hard as they could, but without using any thread. "Is it not magnificent?" said the two old statesmen who had been there before. "Your Majesty must admire the colors and the pattern." And then they pointed to the empty looms, for they imagined the others could see the cloth. "What is this?" thought the emperor. I do not see anything at all. That is terrible. Am I stupid? Am I unfit to be emperor? That would indeed be the most dreadful thing that could happen to me. "Really," he said, turning to the weavers, "your cloth has the most gracious approval," and nodding contentedly, he looked at the empty loom, for he did not like to say that he saw nothing. All of his attendants, who were with him, looked and looked, and although they could not see anything more than the others, they said, like the emperor, "It is very beautiful." And all advised him to wear the new magnificent clothes at a great procession which was soon to take place. "It is magnificent, beautiful, excellent," one heard them say. Everybody seemed to be delighted, and the emperor appointed the two swindlers imperial court weavers. The whole night, previous to the day on which the procession was to take place, the swindlers pretended to work and burned more than 16 candles. People should see that they were very busy to finish the emperor's new suit. They pretended to take the cloth from the loom and worked about in the air with big scissors, and sewed with needles without thread, and said at last, "The emperor's new suit is ready now." The emperor and all of his barons then came to the hall. The swindlers held their arms up as if they held something in their hands and said, "These are the trousers. This is the coat. And here is the cloak," and so on. They are all as light as a cobweb, and one must feel as if one had nothing on at all upon the body. But that is just the beauty of them. "Indeed," said all the courtiers, but they could not see anything, for there was nothing to be seen. "Does it please your majesty now to graciously undress," said the swindlers, "that we may assist your majesty in putting on the new suit before the large looking-glass?" The emperor undressed, and the swindlers pretended to put the new suit upon him, one piece after another. And the emperor looked at himself in the glass from every side. "How well they look! How well they fit!" said all. "What a beautiful pattern! What fine colors! That is a magnificent suit of clothes." The master of the ceremonies announced that the bearers of the canopy, which was to be carried in the procession, were ready. "I am ready," said the emperor. "Does my suit not fit me marvelously?" Then he turned once more to the looking glass, that people should think he admired his garments. The chamberlains, who were to carry the train, stretched their hands to the grounds as if they lifted up a train, and pretended to hold something in their hands. They did not like people to know that they could not see anything. The emperor marched in the procession under the beautiful canopy, and all who saw him in the street and out of the windows exclaimed, "Indeed, the emperor's new suit is incomparable. What a long train he has! How well it fits him!" Nobody wished to let others know he saw nothing, for then he would have been unfit for his office, or too stupid. Never emperor's clothes were more admired.
"But he has nothing on at all," said a little child at last.
"Good heavens! Listen to the voice of an innocent child," said the father. And one whispered to the other what the child had said.
"But he has nothing on at all," cried at last the whole people. That made a deep impression upon the emperor, for it seemed to him that they were right. But he thought to himself, "Now I must bear up to the end." And the chamberlains walked with still greater dignity, as if they carried the train, which did not exist.
So there you have it, Hans Christian Andersen's The Emperor's New Clothes. I find this an interesting story because how many times in our lives do we feel the pressure of others around us to act because we feel that they're judging us, we're judging ourselves, and so we do things that are against our nature, against our better judgment, because of what we expect others to think of us and what we want, how we want to be projected out there. In our last episode, we talked about a quote from Christopher Walken saying that, "If you know how quickly people forget the dead, you will stop living to impress people." And this story of the emperor's new clothes encapsulates that idea that the emperor and all of his court, and even the people of the town, were living to impress others because of what they were told the outcome should be. That if you're unfit for your office, or you're stupid, you won't be able to see them. And nobody wants to come across as that. But how many times in our life have we fallen ill? Have we fallen victim to the same general mentality that we do stuff because we are expected to by others? And we forget our better judgment and the things that we know are to be true. And so with that, was just the thought that was coming with this as we're going. This is a From the Hat Raw. It's coming out, no editing, and we're just going to let this go. Now, a little bit of background behind this story of the Emperor's New Clothes. Hans Christian Andersen, just like the Brothers Grimm and many other storytellers, the ones that eventually published their stories, aren't always the ones who originally told it. There's a story out there that Hans Christian Andersen, even while this story was at the publishers, he changed the ending. And it's an interesting idea in that people aren't quite sure, you know, it's kind of a legend of itself, but it says, according to the Wikipedia, because that's, you know, the A1 top source. But either way, in a quick search for this in Wikipedia, it actually says that Hans Christian Andersen, when he was a child, he was brought to see the king, King Frederick VI of Denmark. And when the king made his appearance, probably in the same type of procession, he came out and everyone was like, ooh, the king, oh wow. Hans Christian Andersen, he cried out to his mother, oh, he's nothing more than a human being. And his mother then tried to silence him, saying, have you gone mad, child? And who knows? This might have been something that had influenced Hans Christian Andersen in writing this story, or at least in having the ending be what it is. Now, it looks as though this story might have been around a little longer. Again, Hans Christian Andersen being the one who published it. The original, believed original source was from a 1335, so 550 years prior, a story from Spain. It was a collection of stories that came from Spain. And in the original source tale, the king, same type of idea, some people who said they were weavers come in, and their thing was, instead of that the cloth would be invisible to those who are stupid or unfit for their position, their thing was that it would be able to, people who couldn't see the clothes were not the son of their presumed father. So for illegitimate children, essentially, could not see the material. And but Christian Andersen, he altered it to change the focus to pride and intellectual vanity rather than adulterous paternity. And now there also seems to be an even older source that comes from about 300 years earlier. About 100 years earlier from India, and which was a summary of tales from 280 years earlier than that. And so it's possible that the original tale, or at least the original that we have a document of, comes from 1052. And again, the same idea is that the king was offered to have this supernatural garments weaved for him. And again, the original idea was that could not be seen or touched by anyone of illegitimate birth. So that was the original idea. I actually really like Andersen's change on the story because it, I think it's more personal to us. Not everyone is illegitimate in their birth. And back then, again, that was an important thing as royalty and knowing your lineage and all that. It was an important thing for societal and cultural opinions of you. But I like Hans Christian Andersen's change because I think it applies more to us and to humanity as a whole, in that it's appealing to, you know, our pride, our intellectual vanity, our vanity, just vanity, and that we are often afraid of speaking up because of the judgments of others and what we feel their presumptions of us will be. So I do like that change. Now, with this story, I do plan on doing a few more episodes like this. I would love to tell stories. I would love to speak about lore and myth and legends and all that stuff. I love it. So if there's anything that you would like to hear, or you'd like to maybe have us research and know a little bit more about, you can hear some backstories on some of this stuff. We'd love to have you share that. So what are your favorite fairy tales? What are your favorite nursery rhymes? What are your favorite Mother Goose stories, Aesop's fables, anything? What are stories that you remember that still sit with you today that help guide and shape your decisions and how you think and believe? And so please go on and share that with us. You can, again, find us on all the social medias. We're on the Facebooks. We're on the Instagrams. You can message us there. You can direct message us in the TikToks as well. But please, we want to know, what are your favorite fairy tales? What are your favorite nursery rhymes? What are your favorite stories from your childhood? We'd love to hear that. We'd love to have you share with that. And with that, please remember to go subscribe to From the Hat. It allows you to get the episodes immediately when they drop, hot off the presses, right into your digital device of choice. And again, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please consider giving this show and this episode your own review. But again, follow us on social medias. Comment, suggest, interact with us. We want to know what you're hearing, what you're thinking about. And with that, this has been Ryan Pond, the voice of authority, for From the Hat. Take care, and we'll see you on the flip side.